Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
Flight guidance.
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this soundtrack.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance.
Okay,
we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot del H. I'm going around the horn. Make your go-no-goes based on the data you had prior to LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're going fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue. PDI.
Coming to you live from the slopes of the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country and in the paranormally active shadow of Mount Rainier, it's Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your hosts, John Almada and Kat Lang. God, if those pesky kids hadn't have got their noses into my business, I might have been able to get away with it. I'm old man Jenkins here. Kat, You don't sound like you're feeling good.
I'm fine.
Well, she's got a cold, our co-host, so I'm going to try to do most of the talking work. Because the poor thing, she's sniffling and kind of making all sorts of noises.
About five of them.
Whoa. What'd you get?
Teddy bears, chocolate, soup, crackers, tea, a dust mask. Not sure what that's for.
Theraflu.
I got some NyQuil, some DayQuil, some Tylenol, cold and sinus. Some Hall's Menthol Lyptus cough drops and some honey cough drops.
Well, the honey ones are the best for what I think what you're going through. Just keep those Papados signs. Anyway, hey, tonight's the reincarnation show here with our own Carla Hicklin. She's going to be with us at 8:30, and she's going to be talking about that kind of stuff. As a matter of fact, just real briefly, I'm just going to read a little bit. About reincarnation, it's literally the literal meaning is to be made flesh again, and is a doctrine or metaphysical belief that some essential part of a living being, in some variations only human beings, survives death to be reborn in a new body. This essential spark is often referred to as the spirit or soul, or the higher or true self, divine spark, or just plain old I. According to such beliefs, a new personality is developed during each life in the physical world. But some part of that self remains constant throughout the successive lives. So we're going to tackle some of that and also talk about some of Carla's other books, because she's written quite a few. And I saw on one of her pages when I was doing the research for the show that she kind of likes to jump different subjects. So she's pretty varied in her writing. And of course, oh God, she loves not to talk about, right about to pens. There he is. Oh, goodness gracious me. Yeah, this is Mrs. Dentire here. Oh, I changed characters. Okay. Let's see. So her books, a couple of them we're going to talk about are Reincarnation Claims and Awakening for Departure. And so we'll go through that with her and talk all about that. Let's go ahead and pull up the news for the week. And let me pull that around. 9-year-old boy enthroned as reincarnated monk. Let's see if I can find that. Here it is. This is from SinToday.net, the online Sin newspaper. And it is a very good paper. From Das Mala, April 6th, IANS. It's Tuku Tisini. Oh, God, I can't even say this name. It's filled with T's, but I'll do my best. Tuku Senyi K. Trul Tenzin Stian Ripinoche, a 9-year-old boy, was Monday enthroned as the reincarnation of Gezi Lobsang Gyatso, the founder of the Institute of Buddhist Dialectics, or the IBD. And the coronation ceremony took place in this North Indian hill town. The boy was recognized by His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, as the reincarnation of Lobsang Gyatso. I can't even say these names.
He's from Washington State, too.
Yeah, in 2006, and was enthroned at a ceremony in accordance with the Buddhist belief of rebirth, as said this Kasang Dandul, assistant director of the IBD. And he was born on May 14, 2001, was brought here from Leh Sunday for the coronation ceremony. And his in his prior life, he was a 70-year-old monk who was murdered along with two disciples in February 1997, and he was a close confidant of the Dalai Lama. We came to know about 5 years ago that a boy in a remote village in Leh knows about his past life. Our interaction with the boy affirms our belief that the slain monk has been reborn. And so this goes on just a little bit. The link's on our main page. And interesting, kind of ties in with our subjects tonight. Let's see, what else have we got? Reincarnation of Henry VIII is David Starkley. I guess he's a well-known English historian. And he seems to, just to paraphrase the article, which is on the, also on the main site, he seems to share quite a few of Henry VIII's personality traits and the way he was also raised, which both men were raised by women pretty much exclusively. And this one just goes on with, let me see, let me look at some of the stuff here. He describes, Starkin describes enjoying in exquisite detail how a 3.5-year-old Henry rode a horse and observed the rituals of knighthood. There is, I point out, a story about Starkey at the same age explaining a complicated recipe to a neighbor. Well, you can't compare the two, he shakes his head. Henry's doing something physical. Anyway, it goes on, but evidently there is some quite a bit of conjecture that this guy is Henry VIII. So, Henry VIII, I am, I am. Let's go on to the Nevada City Ghost Hunters in Virginia City. Yeah, waiting for that link to pop up here. And that's this is from Reno, Nevada, with renowned psychic Gavin Cromwell of UK's Cromwell's Quest, worked with the Real Paranormal Investigation Group, RPI, for a walking tour of some of Virginia City's most haunted buildings. After a quick meal where the investigators learned more about Gavin and his methods and some of his experiences, they headed for the Union Brewery in North C Street. And Gavin and his team had previously asked that they not be informed of where they were going or anything about the history of the town. And they hit the Union Brewery, the research, I'm just going to jump here, jumped into something about George the Meat Man, a regular at the Union Brewery, so that was a character that was at that place, Sergeant Major Saloon, the Comstock Mill, the Washoe Club, and all sorts of interesting things seem to happen. So this article here has photos, and looks like they've got a couple of nice orbs in some of these shots. And the Boot Hill Cemetery, where I've been back about 2-3 years ago, we actually stayed out there, and that was one of my very first investigations out in Virginia City. And really neat article, so go check that out. And how are you doing, Kat?
I'm doing good.
You're doing good?
Yeah.
You said you lost your voice.
I did.
Well, you found it.
Yes, I did.
I'll be darned. So yep. Well, good to have it back. Yep. Well, we had an interesting day here on the ranch. I was actually here in the studio up in the attic looking for some things because my father has been sorting through a lot of our old papers and pulled down three boxes and had the ladder in here and was trying to avoid destroying the studio and got these boxes down, took them in, and we found a bunch of old papers from the Portuguese side of my family when they first came over here. And then not only that, there were actual, from World War II, we found the old ration books with all the explanations of, how much sugar you could get, these different things. You really don't realize what people went through until you read some of this stuff and some of the rules and restrictions. The government was even, during World War II, was even asking people to send in their fat and different things from cooking so that they could use it for lubricants and different chemical processes. So there was a lot going on, and if you happen to talk to some of your old folks out there who went through it, I think you'd be surprised. But, we were just reminiscing, looking around at some of this stuff, and I found out some names I didn't know that my family actually had a different name and changed it when it came over here. So we were... Yeah, I was like, what? I didn't know that. And, oh, yeah, we didn't tell you that, did we? Well, thanks. So that was neat to find out. But what have you been doing in the past week, Kat? Because I know you were doing some investigation stuff.
Well, I was supposed to do some investigating, but the people never called me. So I've just been going through some of my old photographs and I have actually taken pictures of four full-body apparitions, and I pulled those pictures out, and the guys at work kind of want to see them, so I thought I would get those together, and I've been struggling through going to work every day with this miserable cold flu thing I got, but I made it all the way through yesterday.
Oh, so you were just walking around, just staring straight ahead, going, please just get through it.
Right.
Yeek. So you was your voice gone for more than one day, or?
Yes.
Yikes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, at least it's
one
of those jobs. What's that?
I said, oh, well, life happens, I guess.
Yep. Well, anyway, let's see. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the... we've been doing our own case analysis from our Pilot Hill investigation, which happened on March 20th and 21st. And we have been going through our video evidence and also through our EVP stuff and had quite a few finds on this case. It was a pretty active place, and I think we've got roughly 10 to 12 entities that we picked up in this haunt. And it's an interesting building, like I was telling you about before, where the home has a strange two circular octagons that intersect. And at the very in the middle of the intersection is the hallway that splits off to the two sets of rooms, and we had a lot of activity there. And matter of fact, we were contacted by the owner after the investigation and told that the cold spot has increased considerably in the area where we had our actual command base and our video equipment and all that. So there was a lot that went on, but we did pick up a few things. So I thought I'd play a few EVPs. And until we get through here at about 8:25 and play some of our funny music. So I'm going to go ahead and look here. There was one here where there was, in that general vicinity, was a long corridor where basically it's the washroom, and then they're kind of like their central storage for the home. And this EVP we picked up, and it's basically, I'm going to pop it at 70% here on the playback. And it says, here under the washer, basically, it's a woman's voice. So we were interested in that. Here goes. And I'll boost it a bit. Oops, the screen just decided to refresh. Give me a moment. It always does that at the most inopportune times. Here we go. Yeah, it's this woman saying, I'm here under the washer, which, I don't know. I'm not sure what... When we go out on these investigations, sometimes spirits just do not make sense. And why would we be looking for people under a washer? I don't know. Anyway, oh, let's talk about... There's quite a few folks showed up so far. We've got 8 folks in the chat room, so I wanted to say hi to everybody in the chat rooms. You know, to save Kappa trouble, I'll do the shout-outs tonight since she's... not feeling good.
I think I'm going to make it.
You think
do I work phones? You don't work phones? Me? No.
Okay, here we go. Let me look. Here's one that's kind of near and dear after your own heart. It's the spirit saying, I'm sick of this. So we'll play that. That was a male voice, so we'll butt boost that to 100%, and let's try it again. There we go. And we had quite a few more male voices in that side of the house than female, but what was interesting is we had a woman's voice in the kitchen saying, Papa, help, and asking for help. Continually coming in on that side of the house. So we're going back, and we've secured basically 2 investigations to go back and just really work the place with very few people in the home so we can really, you know, cut down any contamination, you know, from people talking in the background and that kind of thing. But definitely, you know, we're going to be reporting back to them that the place is definitely haunted. We just got so much, it was just unbelievable.
I wish I could go down there.
Well, you just hop in a plane or a car.
Right.
Yeah. Here's one with Michelle, one of our senior investigators. She was talking, and this man's voice comes in and says, shut the hell up. Not very nice, but oh well.
Hello, my name is Michelle. Is there anyone in here with us?
You can hear that in the background, that guy definitely speaking, shut the hell up. So it was interesting. Let's see. Let's look at, here's one. I'm not sure if we played this before, but it's the same. I think it may be the same guy saying, it's our money. So I'm going to pop that in. Actually, it sounds more like a woman when I play that. I'm going to boost it up just a little bit to 150%. And so even on the other side, money counts. And we got one more that was absolutely unique, unlike anything we've ever picked up. We had a woman's voice come in and say her full name for us. And so we've got our researcher checking into this, and her name is Vera Michelle Mitchells. And she says this, we just checked it out at our team meeting this morning to find out, was anybody talking about that name for some reason? And no one could, no one had said anything like that, so we're counting it as the real deal, a real EVP. So here goes. And what was strange was the way she said Michelle. I thought it was Michelle, and had to really listen to it and play it a bunch of times to finally realize it was Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, our researcher is going in and looking into that to see what we find, and we'll come back with a full report on maybe some of the matching personalities. And the owners actually went and looked at the local graveyard to see if there was anyone that matched some of the names that we did find, because we talked with them last night. So they went out there and didn't find much in the way of matching names, but we got everything from guys, saying their name was Mo to this Vera person and a few other names, probably about, I'd say 10 names. I don't have the list in front of me, but I copied you on that, I think. Emailed that out, and hopefully we'll see that that case come back with some interesting things. And so anyway, let's continue on. Here's one that was in what we call the Blue Room. The Blue Room was pretty, I think it was probably the most ominous place there. The reason we were called in on the case, it turned out that their daughter slept in that room. That was her room, and it was had just a funny energy about it. And whenever anybody would sit there, they'd feel like the walls were closing in, and it was like getting dark. And we'd rotate different groups in, or just individuals. I'd go in and sit and have them come back out. And what ended up happening was I went in there, sat down, and immediately noticed a shadow to my left. And when I turned to look at it, it was gone. I basically thought it was one of my lights that I had with me. And I explained it away on tape. So that I figure, and I debunked it, except for the fact that the shadow person who was standing there countered that and says, "Yeah, right, that was the light." So we got that, and definitely a room that I don't know. I'm not sure I really want to go back in there alone after some of the stuff we picked up, because we did leave a drop recorder in there overnight for 12 hours, and it ran almost at the end when one of the owners came in. And started working in the computer in that room, we picked up this kind of growling noise. So I don't have that loaded up for tonight, but we're going to go back in, multiple investigators, hit it hard, and see what else we pick up. And maybe we'll get some of the same names or maybe even some more. But anyway, Kat, I feel bad. You're feeling so bad.
Why? I'm fine.
Yeah, well, you're on the mend then.
I'm doing a lot better than I was day before yesterday.
Yeah, I noticed you were kind of quiet out there.
I'm doing good.
Okay.
Just listening to you.
All right. Here's one we got from the drop recorder, because we just got that turned back into us. We accidentally left it there. So we just the owners dropped by our place, and they're friends of the family. And when I analyzed it, we got this voice that says it fizzled, and it's kind of one of those metallic EVPs. You know the kind I mean, that they have the click and they sound mechanical almost.
Mm-hmm.
So here's this one. Yeah, hear that?
Uh-huh.
That was nobody had anything on them or any gear like that that would cause that. So oops, gotta. I wish. Here it is. I'm going to pop this up to 150 and play it again. Yeah, it fizzled. And then we had another one. We were talking with the owner just when we had set the drop recorder up. And he was kind of kidding a little bit. And this squeal came through. And we've never heard anything like this before, ever. So here goes the squeal.
She's nearsighted like her dad. She couldn't see stars over glasses.
No, it's supposed to like pull through.
Seemed like that.
Yeah,
idea.
It does. Definitely flowers.
So that was a new one for us. Anyway, all in all, an interesting case. And oh, you poor thing, you're still sleeping.
Yeah, I'd like to visit that house someday. And
well, when you get out this way, we'll definitely, we're keeping that case open because there's just so much activity on site. As a matter of fact, when we were doing our personal experiences review this morning, Kathy and one of our other Kathys on the team and her husband, I was talking with them this morning and totally had forgotten that on the pre-investigation, they were there with us. She was standing there just out in the front of the house and her hands started turning blue. And she looked down and commented about it and called us all over, and sure enough, they were turning blue. And we asked, is it cold? And she says, no, but there's a presence here, and it feels like somebody's grabbing my hands. So she was more than convinced right at that point that there was paranormal activity at the house. So definitely an active place. We're going to keep hitting it. It's not far from Bailey House, which we've talked about on past shows. It's only like about a mile away from there.
Right.
So that area is just friggin' full of ghosts. So
I'll make it down there to go to the house.
Okay, well, we'll definitely hold it open for you, because we want you to check it out.
No, you do, Okay.
Oh, yeah, we want you to check it out. Trust me. I'm sure you could do some things remotely, though. I'd kind of pick up on what's going on. So.
I know everything that's going on in that friggin' place. I just would like to see it.
Yeah, it's kind of a kooky design. I'll forward some of the photos to you and have you take a look just so you get a feel for it. Anyway, so let's go ahead and take our break. And
yeah.
When we come back, we'll do a little bit of about a bio of Miss Carla.
Right.
And get into some of the interview with her.
Yep.
And go forward from there. So I'm going to go ahead and, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and switch out one of the songs. Let's have some fun, huh? Let's do something funny, get people laughing here. So here we go, and we'll be back in just about 4 minutes.
Yeah. A used pink bathrobe.
I love this song.
Mint snow globe, a smurf. TV tray I bought on eBay. My house is filled with this crap. Shows up in bubble wrap most every day. What I bought on eBay. Tell me why
I need another pet.
Is liable to snipe you with 2 seconds left to go. Whoa, got PayPal or Visa, whatever'll please ya, as long as I've got the dough. I'll buy your tchotchkes, sell me your watch, please.
Listening to Ghostwriter Paranormal Radio, coming to you from the star-filled skies of the Sierra Nevada Range here in Northern California. Okay, everybody, we're back, and we got some shout-outs to do, Kat, so maybe you can hit that.
We have guest and learner, guest, Southern Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
Guest, Brian, me, and John. And then, of course, there's Carla L. Tunafish.
Tunafish. Yeah, I saw that, and I'm going, she changes, I think, every week to something new. It's kind of a different, either meat or vegetable of the week with her. I don't know.
We call each other fish names. I'm the helpful goldfish.
Oh, goldfish. Okay. Well, yeah, you got that kind of thing going. Yeah. Although
I promised Lisa I would send her all of this friggin' chocolate. I got like 5 baskets full of it, and my friends are coming back with more. And I'm like, damn, I got teddy bears and flowers and okay.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and get into the bio and the call-in number. Major hint to Carla, our guest, 646-478-0377. That's
Carla.
478-0377. Call in, Carla.
Carla.
And then we'll open up also for regular listeners to call in, once we kind of get into the whole interview. And so let's go ahead and get going. Carla, in the bio I have here, says she grew up mainly in St. Louis and was shuffled around mostly between relatives most of her life, graduated high school in Pennsylvania. Her paranormal interest began after the passing of her husband, and she says, we were actually divorced and had been for 20 years. He was my best friend and confidant and helped her through some rough times. Had 17 dreams shortly after his passing, of which 16 came true. We'll go into some of that. She's written several books, Disparate Women, Charlatans, and Conspiring Whores. It's a woman's handbook describing the many phases we go through and luckily don't go through. Also have an Amazon short called Bon Appetit to Darling. Bon Appetit. This is a silly story I wrote in college but updated it. It's about a housewife who is slowly losing her patience with her family. Could be PMS, the change. Doesn't specify why she behaves irrationally. And she's also received a few awards from the Poet Society for poetry she has written. And let's see, I found one more bio on her from a second source, and I was just looking to see what else we have here. Awakening by Departure talks a bit about that, a self-help book for parents who have faced the tragic loss of a child and attempts to comfort the parents and also the other children in the household. And she's also a huge fan of Viggo Mortensen, so poetry. And I think I see her dialed in here, so I'm going to go ahead and switch her in.
Miss Carla.
Carla. Come in, Carla. Come in. Carla, come in.
Here I am, darling.
Listen to the fish. Listen to me.
I don't know how we got on that this week, but, yeah, it's been fish names this week. I don't know why.
That's right. Bluegill, carp. Salmon.
Fish bait.
That's right.
I don't know.
It's something fishy around here. Okay, I get it.
All right,
let's talk about this. Okay. So, Carla, you're here.
Yes, I am. And you're there.
And plenty of the pins for everybody here, so we're all set. No, oh, goodness gracious.
Carla.
Oh, no.
Carla, you need some depends. Oh, Carla, yes. Carla.
All right, guys.
Oh, goodness gracious. So, Carla, tell us about what's going on with you right now. How's life treating you?
Well, I'm writing another book. It's called Ghosts Are Not Part of the Four Main Food Groups. I'm having fun with that. Yeah.
What?
A lot
tell
of
us about this. This is too good.
Oh, it's actually, I'm following a lot of investigators, a lot of paranormal groups, a lot of paranormal individuals that are investigating, and it's interesting. There's some funny parts in there. That's all I want to say.
Okay, so when do you think that you're going to be done and have this gem published for us all to read?
It'll probably be another year. probably.
Oh, okay.
It won't be right away. I take my time. I like to be very thorough.
I know the feeling. I'm in the final stages of book one on my trilogy. I'm writing a science fiction story, and it's the characters get out of control so fast. They're unruly. Anyway, that's a different story. But hey, reincarnation, it's really an interesting subject, and I thought I knew a little bit about it before I started really studying for the show, and I found out I didn't know very much. And so I wondered how you got into all this, and maybe you could tell us a bit about, where your journey in learning all about
this. It was an accident for me, really, because I never really gave it much thought, but it started back years ago, more than 20 years ago, when I was in college in St. Louis, and I had several friends, that were telling me about their past lives and things, and, I just looked at them like they were all nuts, really. I didn't believe in anything like that. But the more friends that I seemed to make, especially in philosophy class, that was one of my favorite classes. You hear a lot about reincarnation because a lot of the philosophers believed in it, and wrote about it. And so I did start getting more interested in that. And I started kind of researching, through the libraries, and I thought, you know what, I want to do a book. It just came to me. I want to do a book. And I thought, I'm not going to come to the library. I never read anything by Edward Case. I never read Reincarnation, Peter Proud, nothing like that until I finished my research. And I began traveling. I really put a lot of effort into it. It took me a little over more than 20 years to finish it, but I wanted to get firsthand information from people, from their cultures. So one of my first trips was to Greece. I talked to a lot of those people. I eventually, about 2 years after that, ended up in Africa. That was interesting. Talked to a lot of the different tribes, found out what their belief in reincarnation was. Had to have a translator. I didn't understand a lot of what they were saying, so I did have to have a translator, which was really interesting, too. then I went into Italy later. I think that was just about a year later, and actually met a man over there, a priest, very nice person. Got to know him rather well, and he actually informed me when I was asking him about reincarnation that the church many, many centuries ago, years ago, whatever, I can't remember the exact time, the church actually taught reincarnation, and there are doctrines on this in the church in Italy, but they don't teach it anymore.
This would be the Catholic Church, right?
Right. Yes, it would.
Yeah.
They taught reincarnation, and that floored me. I thought, they did? And he backed that up pretty good. And he also told me, I can't remember what he told me now. It was there a second ago. I can't remember. But
Do you think that the Catholic Church taught reincarnation? It's Easter, and this is the time when Jesus was crucified and he was resurrected on Easter Sunday, and I'm wondering if that ties in with reincarnation at all.
The Easter in that? No.
Well, he died and he came back.
Right, but that was Jesus.
Right.
We're speaking Jesus there. No, I don't personally know, because most of the Christians that I have spoken to do not believe in reincarnation. Most of the pastors, ministers, whatever I talk to, they do not believe in reincarnation.
Huh.
They don't believe that John the Baptist was the reincarnation of Elijah. They believe it was just John the Baptist was speaking in the spirit of Elijah, but it was not a reincarnation. So, no, I've never talked to anyone that believes Jesus was reincarnated, if that's what you mean. He was raised from the dead.
It's kind of along those lines, though.
No, not to me it's not. It's really not. I don't look at that as reincarnation at all. I look at that totally different, because actually Jesus did not teach reincarnation, although some people will say that he did. Because when you read the Bible, people interpret it differently in some areas. We all do. We all have minds. We can think for ourselves.
Right.
Some people will argue that Jesus taught reincarnation, but I don't feel he did. But,
So do you think that the Bible, though, in the past, before it was there, I can't remember. It was, I believe, it was 565 A.D. There was a council that did get together and revised the Old Testament and did a whole set of edits and basically revisioned a lot of those beliefs out from the earlier sects. Can't say the word today. But Christianity, the sects of Christianity. Those earlier groups that were divided on the issue, and evidently those who didn't believe won out. And you must have found some references to that.
Certainly. It's been revised several times, actually. And back, I'm trying to remember the exact date, and I can't, but it was taught and it was written, reincarnation. There are doctrines. Actually, still doctrines, and I believe they're in Latin, and it was part of the Bible at one time, but no, it has been revised so many times that was taken out. There was a philosopher, Oregon, that actually really pushed reincarnation. He was a philosopher way back when, and they were actually persecuting him for teaching this. And this is about when it all came about, where the church took reincarnation out and said we can't teach this anymore. It is against, God and that. But, yes, it was. Actually, there are doctrines on that. It was part of it.
It just seems to me so counterintuitive. I don't know. I believe in reincarnation. I do think that it's given the way the universe is built, and it's so economical in the way it does things. Plants die, they come back, people die. That experience and that all that energy built into gaining a perspective and their souls growing, if you will. There's got to be a reason for all this, and I tend to think it is to grow the soul. And as we progressively get more complex and all that kind of thing as biological entities, I do think there's something going on here, and there's just a lot of evidence to support it. So I find the Western belief sometimes a little bit. Yeah, hard to understand. So,
I do too. But there are a lot of documented cases, I guess you'd call them, where people can recall a past life without the help of a hypnotist or a psychic or anything. They can recall a past life, and there was a little girl. She was 9 years old at the time. She lived in Indiana, and I wrote this in the book. I included her. I believe she's 19 now, I believe. She thought that she was Lucille Ball. A lot of people, when they're recalling a past life, almost always will say that they were a famous person. Most women will actually claim to be Marilyn Monroe. Now, this doesn't really mean anything because sometimes it can be an historical marker, and that just means that you were in that era. Doesn't mean you were actually that person. But this little girl, she was very convincing that she was Lucille Ball at 9 years old. And her mother and her father, they listened to her stories, and they were just really tired of listening to her. But she had told them about Desi Arnaz, about their initial meeting in Maryland in a diner years before, just a couple years before she actually met him. And her mom and dad, of course, they're like, no, no, no. They met on a boat or, something like that. Well, anyway, the girl says no. She says, and I even think that place burnt down. And she smelled smoke, and she says, I bet that place burnt down. Or anyway, her mom and dad had enough of this, and they wanted to prove to their daughter that this is not even possible, They went to Maryland, where the little girl, they actually took this trip from Indiana to Maryland, went to where the little girl said the diner would have to be, and there was a diner there that burnt down to the ground when that girl had said that it did.
Wow.
So how do you explain that? A little girl that's never been out of Indiana, except for a trip to New Mexico to visit her aunt a few years before that probably, how do you explain it? There were other people that I spoke to in Scotland. A woman there, or she was not from Scotland, I'm sorry, she was from New Jersey. She'd went to Scotland because she knew that she lived in Scotland, 200 years before. She was able to go to areas that she had told her husband and family about. She knew it. So how do you explain it? We have to,
That's the thing. I mean, you hear so much about children, you know, having the ability up to, I think, about, you know, up to 5 to 7 years old. Certain children have the ability to recall that past life and describe it in detail. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they're conditioned out of it, which is unfortunate. I myself went through a past life regression when I was about 29 or 30. And fortunately, I was not Marilyn Monroe. But what I recalled was that that my last life was that of an Indian warrior, and I was killed in battle.
Oh.
And by a spear, and I've always had a kind of a horror of spears and anything, you know, really sharp like knives, things like that, and never could figure that out until that point in time. And so it was not a famous life; it was an unknown life. And I just recalled I was under hypnosis, and I recalled being, you know, running around in this battle and finally getting, you know, aced. And next thing you know, so. I think there's I think there is something to this, but obviously different cultures have different perspectives on this. So you hit all these places: Greece, Africa, Italy.
Yeah,
did you hit other places?
I lived in Hawaii, and I actually spent a lot of time in Tahiti studying their culture, and I went all through the United States, especially when I started with the psychics. I wanted a lot of psychics to visit, to see, you know, get their take on everything, the past life regression. I went in as a client. I always wore a wedding ring. I wasn't married. But I wanted to see if I could, you know, find genuine psychics to tell me about a past life. So, I want facts. I don't want a lot of, you know, okay, I'm psychic and I can tell you this is what your future is. I looked for the psychics. I would go in, I want them to tell me something about my childhood, something I can verify. Then I want them to tell me a little something about my present, something I can verify. Then I'll listen to them about my future and a past life. Out of 120 in the United States that I talked to, 5 of them were truly gifted. 5 out of that many. The rest were cold readers. The 5 that pegged everything, they knew right away I wasn't married, even though I had a wedding ring on. But the other ones talked about my husband, because they picked up on the wedding ring. And
yeah,
all I did was go along with it. Well, sure, and I just went along with it. You know, I didn't tell them what I was doing or anything, and when I left, I, you know, took my notes and thought, oh, brother. And, of course, you know, most of the time they dubbed me with 2 children. I have no children at all. But, you know, if you just go along with it, and, you know, you can get your research a lot better than cornering them, because then they're just going to throw you out.
Is that like me telling you what color your socks were?
No, you've actually done that. See, I studied on remote viewing, too. So, and that's written in the book, too, because that actually comes into reincarnation a little as well as the out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences. That all correlates in some ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as...
So you knew a bit about the CIA, you know, experiments and things like that were occurring with that.
Yep, I wrote a little bit about that in there also, because I correlated everything together. And the out-of-body experiences I thought was really fascinating, because I never put those with reincarnation until I started doing the research on the reincarnation and found that some people that had near-death experiences, they claimed... Some, not all of them, a few claim that they met Jesus and he gave them a choice. Do you want to reincarnate? Do you want to come to heaven? You know, do you want to go back to your body? They were given these choices, some people were. And I was also surprised that the Western world, when we have a near-death experience, if we have one, we always seem to attach, whatever our religion is, we seem to attach religious tags to those. You know, and I found in the Eastern, like in the Hindus and that, they don't. They come back with visions more so than anything religious attached
uh-huh.
to those. I thought that was interesting. And the Native Americans, most Native Americans, don't. They have the visions when they come back too in order to help others. They don't have a religious tag on those either. It seems like different parts of the world tag different, with their near-death experiences, they have different tags on those. You know, the same part of the country is See, so is this something learned that they grow up with? You know, there's a lot of questions on that.
Do you know, speaking of the near-death experiences, I've read in a number of different books and articles on the subject that most people go through a crisis period every 8, 10, 12 years where they may hit a point where they have the opportunity to basically to jump off the planet, if you will, and have that choice kind of given to them, whether or not they stay or go, and it's like a higher self kind of thing. Did you run into anything like that, in your travels, or you heard those kinds of, at least related
You kind of lost me. I didn't understand that, really.
Well, where it's in every life, there's points at which you have the opportunity to leave the planet or stay. And so did that ever come up in any of the research you did?
Just in near-death experiences when they meet Jesus. That's the only, it was there a second ago. are you talking about possibly deja vu, like you're at a crossroad?
Well, it is that when you basically your life plan is created, and this is the way I've seen this multiple times, is when you agree to come down to this realm here, or over to this realm, up down, I'm not sure which, but. When you agree to incarnate and live in this life, you basically have a roadmap, and you have any number of jumping off points where you can say, I'm tired of this, I want out. And that's kind of preordained in some views, that here are the points at which you're going to hit some crisis, and you could leave. And I've had like several where I've had experiences, I've had 3 heart attacks myself.
Oh,
and been through quite a range with range of experiences with that. But I also had a heat stroke in 2003 was my last one. I passed out at a Renaissance fair, got overheated, and I know I went someplace because I remembered I talked to somebody, but for the life of me I can't remember what happened. But they said I was very close to dying, and they immediately rehydrated me, and I was in an ambulance. I came to, and I'm being prepped. And, it just, the funny part was I remember coming back out of that with the feeling I'd been someplace, and it seemed like my psychic ability was a little enhanced afterwards. But here's the kicker. My spelling ability went to hell. I can't spell for beans now ever since that happened. So I don't know what
was more of an out-of-body experience, See, some folks will say near-death and out-of-body are the same. Others will say it's not. But maybe possibly you were having an out-of-body experience. I mean...
Well, yeah, I've had an out-of-body where in my second heart problem, I was 21 years old. No, actually 28, excuse me. And my heart was in what's called atrial fib, and I'd been doing that for 12 hours, and suddenly my blood pressure just crashed. And I actually left my body, and I recall everything that happened to me with them getting me back. And that was when I really opened up to all of this, one of the events that opened me up to a lot of this kind of thing. But I don't know about this 2003 thing. I really don't know what happened. I can't just say it was one or the other because I was there and then I was out.
It could also be astral projection, because you can do that accidentally. Astral projection, but what I'm thinking is that you didn't die in 2003, right? You weren't dead.
No, I was just in really bad shape there for a little while,
It sounds like out of body, and you must have, I don't know. I mean, it just sounds like it to me, but the other time when you had the heart attack, were you dead then? I mean, clinically?
They had to bring a group in and were working on me, and I was actually conscious of everything going on, but I wasn't there in my body, per se. I was, like, overhead. So I was aware of everything going on, and suddenly I snapped back. And
that sounds more like a near-death experience there.
But I didn't get to see any light. I don't remember seeing any light or anything like that. I was just there in the vicinity, and then the next thing I know, I was back.
Well, not everyone sees a light. Not everyone will. Some people claim that they see relatives greeting them. you know, or telling them you have to go back. Others will see a light. Not everyone will see a light, from what my research shows.
Yeah, it was a strange thing, but when I came back out of it, I was profoundly affected by it. It just left me totally mystified, and I hadn't had any practical experience of that subject, and so I really spent 3 years just, you know, plumbing the metaphysical bookstores and really getting to know what, you know, what was going on with all that. But
you know, it's interesting you talk about these near-death experiences and the out-of-body.
Right.
And actually, my mother was in a coma. She was in a medically induced coma for about a month. And I kind of did some research on these near-death experiences and out-of-body. And come to find out that in the ICU units at certain hospitals, behind the bed, they run a reader board that'll say something silly like, "Purple poodles eat pink popsicles," and it just keeps running. And what people have actually done is they've come out of a coma, or they've had to bring in the crash cart because their heart stopped. And the first thing that they say is, "Why am I getting this purple poodles eat pink popsicles?" And it's actually bringing the doctors closer to believing that they were actually out of their body and floating overhead, and they could read this reader board behind the headboard. So at some hospitals, they still do that.
I have heard of that.
Yeah.
Or people talking, and they've been able to tell people what... See, there's a lot of contradictory about that, about people talking to people in comas, and the people can actually hear them. A lot of people dub those out-of-body experiences when the comatose person can hear the people talking to them, but a lot of the medical doctors, they'll tell you no, it's because their brain's working and they can hear you. Other doctors will say no, they can't hear you at all. So, you know, there's, you know, contradictory there too. But the near-death experiences, the people I spoke to, they always had a profound change of their life too.
Yeah.
You know, if they were felt like they weren't living up to spec, they immediately started changing. A lot of people became religious, most of them, and others just tried to do good. You know, you never really, you know, the majority of them. Some of them, very few, just went on with their life the way it was and really didn't think about anything except, you know, I had a near-death experience, but they didn't change anything. You know, very few people didn't change anything.
Well, with that, we're coming up on the half-hour break, so we'll continue on with this. And I'll remind those folks who want to call in with questions, the number is 646-478-0377, or put your question into the chat room, and we'll be looking for that. Make it kind of, to make it sure it's a question, you know, uppercase the whole thing so it stands out, and then we'll get that into Carla and continue on. So with that... let's go ahead and break, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
We'll be right back. This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, coming to you live on blogtalkradio.com.
Okay, we're coming back. We've got Carla
That's
Hickman
right.
here. Yeah, she's our special guest tonight, talking about reincarnation and some of her other books. Welcome back.
Well, we should probably talk about soulmates.
Soulmates, that's a good start. Let's go
I'm
ahead.
A soulmate. I'm a soulmate.
Oh, you guys are silly.
I'm a silly person.
Soulmate. Damn, I don't feel silly tonight.
As long as Julia doesn't
Past
show
life.
Up.
Past life and treating on present day plane.
Oh, boy.
Okay, well, let's talk soulmates. So you I guess that was part of your research for this particular book?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
I never thought soulmates would relate to reincarnation either, but they seem to relate to that too. It seems that, you know, everyone has one. In the universe, everyone has one. There's different types. There's probably up to 10 different types of soulmates.
Hmm.
And a lot of people always thought, you know, well, we have one soulmate. And some people think, no, there's more. But, well, you come across even our pets. Our pets can be our soulmates because everything is a learning. Everything is teaching us something. And our soulmate can be a pet because they're teaching us unconditional love, because pets have unconditional love, you know. And we also have, you know, karmic soulmates. They can be, you know, family members, close friends, past romantic relationships. They can be anything. You know, there's just different types. There's also what you're reaching for is the true soulmate, the twin flame, they call it in some cultures. And this is the one that is supposed to end the recycling of our souls. This is when you have reached total perfection. But you've also, some people, some cultures believe, you have to go through all of the soulmates before you find this twin soulmate. This way your soul is cleansed. And, okay, there's an example. If you look at true soulmates, they say that when you find this person, you'll know it immediately, but you'll also die within a short period of each other. And now, a short period of time, I haven't been able to pinpoint anyone that can tell me what a short period of time is. So I used examples, say, of Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash, you know, the country western singers.
Uh-huh.
I used them as one example because June Carter died in May. He died in September, and it was 4 months. So everyone believed that they had to, well, you know, everyone that I researched with, they believed that they would almost have to be the twin soulmates because of the fact they died within a short period, if you can classify it short. Now you look at John F. Kennedy, he died in 1963, I believe it was, November 1963.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Jackie Onassis, I believe she died, I can't remember how many years, but it was several years later. Can't remember offhand. Well, a lot of people say there's no way they could have been twin soulmates because of the years that she survived and remarried also. But then other people will point to John F. Kennedy dying in 63, Marilyn Monroe died in 1962. Could they have been the twin soulmates?
Whoa.
You know, even though they were not married, could they have been? You know, a lot of people like to link those two together, so I did too. But, you know, those are just some of the examples of some of the soulmates. There are even, oh goodness, there are so many different kinds. There's 10 from what I remember, but the twin will end it, is what is supposed to be believed. And
that is true. I will verify that statement. That is true.
But, you know, there's also class soulmates, and they reincarnate together each lifetime, and the dharmic soulmates. You know, you'll reincarnate, they say, with your soulmates each time so that you will meet your soulmates in time. Also, there's another theory about marriage, okay? If a person gets married, but it's not their twin soulmate, okay, the twin soulmate who is in the same life, the same lifetime, he will, say it's the man, he will die because his twin soulmate married someone else. Okay, so he will die. when she dies, he may come back right away, the one that died, by the way, or he could rest on a plane. This is a belief of some people.
When she dies,
when she dies, they'll come back together for another chance to meet.
That weekend in Vegas when you got drunk and you just screwed up really bad, could come back to haunt you.
It could.
Is what you're saying to me. Oh, no.
You know what's interesting, Carla? You have just said exactly what I've told somebody before.
Is that right?
You nailed it. I've told somebody exactly what you just said.
Oh. Well, it's not just automatic that if you marry somebody and it's not the soulmate, it's not automatic that they're just going to die right off the bat.
No, not them. But the one that is their soulmate will more than likely die and possibly wait on another plane for the other person to die. Then they will reincarnate together again for a second chance at the meeting.
Sucks.
It's not guaranteed that you're going to meet your soulmate every single lifetime, but you will be in the same vicinity of them. But it's not a guarantee you're going to meet them every single lifetime. And it's not a matter, a lot of people say it's a matter of destiny. I don't really believe in destiny. A lot of people in reincarnation that believe in it do believe in destiny. But that's another theory there with the soulmates, that there is really no destiny. Because the soulmates are in your vicinity, you have to go out of the way to find them, more or less. You'll be in their presence at times or vicinity, but it doesn't mean you're going to get together. You have to make it happen. It's not a destiny thing for some people.
So you're basically saying the future is not predetermined.
No. A lot of people don't believe it is. I don't believe it is. It could be, but I don't think it is.
Yeah, I tend to agree because there's just so much in quantum mechanics and all this talk about multiverses and things like that that do say that it's just almost impossible to predict what's going to happen. So I tend to agree with that. That makes sense. But still, I don't know. Making one wrong choice and someone else dies for it, it bothers me. It's intrinsically...
Yeah, but you won't know it. I mean,
but just now it's like, oh, man, I'm going to really think about what I do, you know?
Well, it does give you that kind of perspective, indeed. But, you know, a lot of the Kabbalah religion, now they'll tell you that if you marry someone and you realize it's not your true soulmate, okay, you can divorce. It's perfectly fine in order to find your true soulmate. So, you know, if the person hasn't died already, you might have a chance to find him or her.
What's your take on it all?
Actually, I don't believe in soulmates. I really don't. I mean, I know I wrote the book on reincarnation and included soulmates, but I really don't believe in those. I never have.
I do.
A lot of people do. And you know, I don't know if I'm right or wrong. I just don't believe in it.
Yeah, I do because I have to.
Well, I mean, it could very well be soulmates out there. I don't know. But I just personally, John, do you believe in soulmates?
Right now, I'm undecided, but just for the fact that you come up with that thing that, like, somebody's going to die, it makes me stop and give pause going, I'm going to be a little more careful about my life decisions and stuff. But I lean to it. I think that there are people that you're meant to be with in life, and I think that, you were talking earlier about the folks that reincarnate together, and I believe that too. Because it just seems to me that certain family and also certain friends and people that you run into and you just click and you almost know each other inside out from the very beginning.
Okay.
And, it just feels like you've known them before. I lean to that. So I'm going to, if I had to come down on one side or the other, it's going to be their soulmates. I think that you're going to have people that are meant to be in your life that are there to teach you something, and you're there to teach them something. And you're richer for the experience, both of you. Or
exactly.
If there's, so it's just, I do believe there's true love out there, and you're meant to meet with somebody. So.
Well, see, now true love, I think, is different than soulmates. you know, in twin flames. I mean, because I don't really believe in soulmates, but I do believe in a true love, if that makes any sense at all. You know.
Oh, okay. So it's sort of it's sort of the same, but slightly different. It just has, I don't know.
See, Aristotle believes that everyone has a soul, and it was split apart, and he called it the split apart, where part of you is missing, and you have to find that other part of you.
Uh-huh.
You know, that to him was his classification of soulmates, calling them split aparts. Most of your philosophers believed in soulmates. A lot of people believe in soulmates. You know, that you are part of someone.
Huh.
But see, you can be a part of somebody from a past life, too, and it coincides with your present-day life.
Well, it'd all be past lives if you believed in the soulmate theory.
Right.
It's all a matter of past lives and that. But there's also a philosopher, and I can't recall for the life of me, I think it was Charles Wendmore, that believes that we have more than one soul inside of us. They're not personal or intimate with each other, but they're all inside of us to learn more and teach us more. Each soul teaches us something different. I don't buy that theory at all, but that is one that I ran across, so I included it.
Well, I could verify that's actually true, because Monday mornings my soul is craving coffee for just to wake up. And for that short time, I'm actually a completely different organism until I re-inhabit my body again. So,
well, maybe that's where our emotions come from, all the different souls that are inside of us, the jealousy, the envy, the hate, the love, you know. Maybe they're controlling all of this then, if you think about
know.
It that way.
I just think people are screwed up for the most part, and we do the best we can as we get older. We just seem to get better, a little bit better at it, or we could turn out to be a complete flop at it, and then we get to come back at it again. Maybe it's just that simple.
Right.
I don't know. I just think that the one thing I can looking at your whole experience and everything that you've been through to ask you here is, did you see a lot of commonalities? Not only the differences, but the commonalities in all the cultures and different things that talked about all these, you know, subjects.
Oh, not a lot, no. Some, yes. In the Western world, it's pretty much the same, pretty much. But over in the different countries, well, now Africa, there's a tribe there that they believe if a person dies in their family and they want them to come back, reincarnate back into their family, what they do is they will carve a hole in the side of their home, and they will carry the dead body through the hole, and someone else will be on the other side, of course, to receive them. And now what they say is they have to bury the person under the home. Now, if you've seen these homes, they're not going to get somebody buried under these homes. But they bury them very close by the homes, I mean, like right along the sides and that. That's
uh-huh.
because they want them to come back. There's another tribe in Africa. They don't believe this at all. They don't use the hole in the wall. What they do is when the person dies, they want this person far away from them, and they will bury them as far away from them as they can, because they want them to reincarnate, but not into the same family. They want them to reincarnate another place, even maybe possibly a whole different species or, you know, anything, so that the person will learn and progress and keep going.
Wow.
So that's an
talk about diversity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
There's commonalities, but there's also differences. Western
right.
world, here you find a lot of the same. A lot of people want a deceased person to come back to the family. There's
uh-huh.
another culture. Oh, my goodness. Now I said it. Now where in the heck was it?
Now, does it matter that you're standing in the family or you're standing in the tribe? Does that determine
sure.
whether or not you come back to them or somewhere else?
It depends on what tribe you're talking to. It really does. I mean, because they don't always agree with each other. Even people in the same tribe will sometimes differ on their belief a little. It's just the same as here. You know, say the Christians, a lot of people say Christians are not allowed to believe in reincarnation. I found a lot of Christians that do believe in reincarnation, but we're not supposed to. So,
Who makes these rules?
Well, if you're following the Holy Bible, then that's where the rules are. But it was written 200 years after the fact also, and reincarnation was thrown out centuries ago, too. You know, it's been revised, you know, so many times. So
uh-huh.
Go back to the original, folks.
Go back. Go back.
Version 1.0 Bibble, okay?
Yeah.
You mentioned animals. I heard that, you know, species. So
right.
what can you tell us about, you know, animal reincarnation or human-to-animal reincarnation or vice versa?
Okay. Many of the cultures believe animals have souls. Some do not. They also believe, okay, you can... All right, if you're a bad person, okay, you're supposed to be learning, you're supposed to be getting better, perfecting, and moving along. But if you constantly will slide backwards, well, that's another point I want to bring up. If you're constantly sliding backwards, you can actually go back to being a plant where you originally, and this is over more in the Middle East, you can go back to being a plant where you originated from, and then you have to earn your way back up to human, so you will go on to be pets, animals, not necessarily pets, because they don't really have a lot of pets.
Really?
Animals, and then you have to progress. Another interesting thing I found was, especially in the Western world, over in the Eastern part of the, yeah, England sometimes too. Most men, when they die, they believe, a lot of these cultures believe, they will never come back as a woman unless they were bad.
Okay.
But,
that sucks, man. That just flat out sucks.
But that's not true, because I interviewed a man that gave me great details of a life that he lived in Las Vegas as a woman.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
I just think that culture is messed up, because, you know, it just seems to me there's no difference. It's what's right for you at the time.
Right, but a lot of them believe that a man will never come back as a woman, never. But a woman will come back as a man. This is a lot of what they believe. So I thought that was rather interesting.
What would it take for a woman to finally reach that, to that realm of being a man? I mean, what thing would they have to do to do
oh,
that?
Oh, do you really want me to go into that? No, I'm kidding.
Well, it's sort of a whacked out thing.
It
just kind of bothered me, but
it really
you
is.
Know.
But they believe the cultures, a lot of the cultures over in the eastern part, they believe women are not, you know, up to the specs of men, more or less. And their belief is a woman will be a man eventually after she keeps perfecting and getting better. But a man will never revert back to being a woman in a reincarnation, never. Not unless they have done bad in their
really?
Life. Then they can go back to being a woman. Or maybe
I don't
want to
have a hoo-hoo. I'm sorry.
Well, we're not going to go there.
I enjoy being a woman, so I'd like to stay a woman too, but, you know.
I don't know. I just find that, I find some of that kind of behavior, it just seems to me it's more cultural than fact. It's not based in anything real other than just, you know, taking advantage of women, you know.
Right. Well, we can't prove reincarnation anyway, you know. I mean, there's no scientific proof, never will be. But we can go by the data we learn from people that claim past lives and can prove it. You know?
So your feeling is that based on all your experience going out in the field with all of this and seeing all the different, you know, various angles of this, is that it does happen. It is a real phenomena that, you know, real souls go through.
I believe to a point, yes, I do. Because of the ones that I spoke to that could actually give you detailed information about past lives and that, yeah, I do. Other times, I don't. I go back and forth. I really do. I'm the most undecided person on reincarnation there probably is. I know it sounds odd, but that's the truth.
I don't know. I don't blame you. I mean, you've done more than probably, you know, 99.999% of the human race. So you've gone in and really lived it, and then put all that time and effort into it.
Right.
You know, you've really explored it. So, you know, if anybody has a right to be undecided, it's you, because you're seeing all these different complexions of it. And then not only that, your life experiences. You're going along in life. You're going to have differences of opinion and change. You know, that's just natural. But
yeah.
you do believe that there's, for the time being, you think there's something to it.
I do.
You just don't know what. Yeah.
I certainly.
Did it ever come to you that you knew what your past life was?
actually,
oh boy, I'm sorry. I wanted to dive into that one, but I just had to ask.
Actually, I have a fear of water, and I was told by two of the psychics that were the truly gifted ones. I found that I had drowned in a past life, you know, which you hear stories of that, people that have fear of fire, you know, or water or something, you know, something happened in a past life. And I knew growing up I've been terrified of water for as long as I can remember. And when these two psychics hit on that I had drowned in a past life, I just kind of cringed, like, oh my, you know, because I knew I had that fear. And I never told them that. I never confirmed it with them either.
Did you ever try to regress and go back to see, you know, what exactly happened? Or is that something you're just kind of holding out on, thinking, maybe not?
No, I didn't. I really didn't. No. It's not something I'll ever do either, really. It's not.
Well,
I won't delve into it.
What about your own abilities? You're a great researcher, from what I can see here. You've got the analytical side down. But what about the other side of yourself, with regard to psychic ability and things like that? Do you seem to be drawn to this for a reason?
No, I don't have any psychic abilities whatsoever. I'm not sensitive at all. I would be the last person in a room to feel a spirit if there was one around. Honestly.
But you had these dreams that I led you right into it. The dreams that you're talking about, you had, let me go back to the notes here, it was 16 out of 17.
I was told those were premonition dreams, and I haven't had one. My husband, when he passed away in 2005, we'd been divorced for many years, but we stayed close after a few years. After our divorce,
yeah,
we got close. But when he died in October 2005, within a few weeks, it could have been 2 weeks, I really don't remember. I started keeping a journal just like a month after the fact. But I was having dreams with him in there, which is pretty normal. When someone passes away, they say that you'll dream about the person that passed away. So I didn't pay much attention to it. But in the first dream that he showed me, he was telling me he was okay, and he was showing me a tattoo on his body that he didn't have a tattoo, and it had a name, Lisa, in there. And Lisa happens to be my best friend, and I thought that was kind of odd and didn't think anything of it. The very next dream I had, he showed me, well, I heard his voice in the dream saying this man's name, and then I saw the man floating down from the sky in a casket, and it was a friend of ours, and he died within a few days after that dream. And I thought, that was weird.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I thought that was very strange, but it didn't stop there, because the very next dream I had again, he gave me a bunch of numbers to add up in this dream, and it was really weird, because when I woke up the next morning, I remembered the numbers, and I started adding them together. And it was weird, because it came up to be his age when he died. One of the sets of numbers did. One of them came up to be my age when he died.
Wow.
And he was giving me these birthdays and stuff to, honestly, if you take his death date, which is 10/15, 2005, if you add them together, you come up with the number 50. That's how old he was when he died. It was 10, 15, plus 20, plus 5, I think, is how I got that. Then there were other numbers. He gave us our wedding anniversary, and that I believe, is what added up to my age. I can't remember. But then after that, I had another dream of another friend. My husband kept saying his name in the dream, but I never actually saw the friend. He just kept saying the name over and over, and he died within the week. And I thought, now there's something to this. This was getting really kind of strange. It really got my attention. But then I had another dream where he was asking for his dog. And I thought, well, his dog? Oh, no. Then I told my brother-in-law about it. I said, you know, he's asking for his dog and stuff. He's like, they're just dreams. Don't worry about it. You know, and I thought, okay. Dog got hit by a car a few days later and died. I mean, just things like that. 16 out of those 17 dreams I had with his voice or his face, they all came true. There's one.
I hope they weren't all this whole, you know, dream of death cavalcade that was going on.
No.
Okay.
No, they weren't. But there was another time when I was in St. Louis where we grew up, and I was coming home, and I actually, this is strange because I took the wrong way on the highway. I started heading northbound instead of south, which I have never done in my life, and I always pay attention driving, and I did that, and I thought, oh, my gosh, and I realized I was going the wrong way. So I got off on the very next ramp and wasn't really thinking, and then I looked up, and I saw, oh, he grew up on this road, you know, just a couple miles down. So I'm making my turn, a left, a U-turn more or less, to get back on the highway. And about that time, the song comes on the radio, Supertramp, Take the Long Way Home.
Wow.
That was one of his favorite songs, and I was also taking the long way home, and it kind of
freaked
me. And I'm on the road he grew up on.
That's wicked cool.
Nothing's ever happened like that again except for that one time, and I laughed. Because it didn't dawn on me until I'm making my turn completely around. I'm like, oh, my. So who knows?
Well,
maybe
he was watching out for you, you know, and he was playing around with you too.
Yeah, a coincidence or just, you know, him. Who knows? But I really got tickled at that.
Well,
I know
the feeling about the dreams. My grandmother died back in 1995, and she had a neurological disease that finally took her life. And I remembered about 3 months. It took 3 months for her to show up to say goodbye to me. She hid all her daughters immediately, but I was the first grandchild. And anyway, I was just asleep one night, and she comes through, and she's looking like she's in her about mid-30s. And surrounded in this golden orange, kind of goldeny orangey light, and she's got the biggest grin on her face I've ever seen. Didn't
wow.
say a word, but
yeah.
She's just sitting there. And all it was this dude, and she's Scottish. She's had flaming red hair, I mean, and these piercing, you know, steel kind of green colored eyes, and they were just dancing.
Wow.
And I never forgot that. It's burned into my memory, and so I know she's there. And I try to get her to come back. I keep calling out to her, going, come on, Graham, you know, come on, talk to me, you know, come on over and, you know, do a dream with me or something. But she never does, and I'm getting kind of ticked off about it. So,
that's so
I don't
strange,
know.
Though, that you said that she was in her mid-30s, but she was actually, you know, quite a bit older than that when she died, right?
Yeah, she was in the mid-70s when she finally passed.
Well, it's just odd that you said that, because I never even thought about this before, but in these dreams, my husband, he's like, you know, when we first got married, that's how young he is in these dreams. And I never even thought of that until you said that. He wasn't.
Yeah, I've heard that they like to come back at an age that is appropriate for whatever they're trying to communicate. And if they're trying to make you feel good about them, they're going to come back when they were at their most vital, you know.
You know, that's interesting because I saw my grandmother when I was 15. I sat straight up and I was staring at her, and she looked like she was about 20, but I knew she was my grandmother, but she was like 20 years old.
Huh.
So
he taught me something. Because I just now realized he was younger in those dreams, and I never even realized it before.
Maybe we're supposed to be having this conversation.
Yeah, I never realized it. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, tell you what, we're coming up on the half-hour break, so we're going to just take a brief moment and come back, and we'll just continue on. Again, I'm going to look for the phone number. What's our phone number? For anyone who wants to call in and talk about this with us, it's going to be 646-478-0377. Or if there are any questions out in the chat rooms, again, uppercase those. We won't think that you're shouting at us. Just get a good question in. We're all waiting for someone to pop in and ask something. So that said, let's go ahead, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Groups is filmed on location with the men of the Imperial Forces. All suspects are guilty, period. Otherwise, they wouldn't be suspect, would they?
Darn straight. Those people are all suspect, man. Hey, welcome back.
That's Carla, right.
Yeah, they're all suspects. Otherwise, yeah. Carla, you're still with us. You're surviving the show.
Yeah, there's a full moon out. I think I'm supposed to be out there howling at it, though.
Well, heck, I'll get some wine out and do the same thing here right after. Get some white wine out and enjoy that. That sounds like a winner.
Might have been a werewolf in one time in past life.
I should have played werewolves from London.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, one of the questions from our notes here, Awakening for Departure.
Awakening by Departure.
Oh, by Departure. Oops, uh-huh. I mistyped that. Okay, Awakening by Departure. Can you tell us about that?
Okay, that is actually a spinoff of one of my other books. What it is personally, I have, there's 16 brothers and sisters my dad has. My mom had 14. And within our family, we have a large family, and a lot of my aunts and uncles, of course, they've lost children, car accidents or cancer or various other things. And I also have friends, like, you know, everyone does, that has lost a child, which is very sad. And when my cousin was killed by a drunk driver, I spent a lot of time with my aunt. That's when I lived in Pennsylvania and went to high school there. And I saw her grief and how she was dealing with it. And I didn't write this book until several years later, but then the more as I got going through life and seeing more children dying and that, and seeing how the parents were coping and other family members, it kind of brought me to my knees sometimes because it's really sad. And I started compiling stories with these families, wanting to know how they dealt with it because they were eager to help other people for one. You know, it's not something you're ever going to get over, but it's something you can learn to live with. And that's what we were writing the book for. I mean, there was a lot of people that got together and wrote this, you know, or gave me the information so I could write it. And we donate a lot of the proceeds of that book goes to the, well, it used to go to the Mothers Against Drunk Drivers.
Uh-huh.
Now we're not sure where it's going to go. We donate part of it to breast cancer, which all my books have go to cancer of some kind. One goes to fight the cancer, and Awakening by Departure, half goes to breast cancer. We're not sure where we're going to put this other half yet, but it's everyone has to agree pretty much where it's going to go, and we don't know yet where the other half will go yet.
Well, that's really neat to hear. Matter of fact, I think we should probably put your links for those books on Amazon, kind of like permanently on our site, so that you know, folks know.
A lot of the funeral homes were passing that book out, Awakening by Departure, for a while. I don't know if they still are. Some still are. I don't know how many. But I was happy to see that.
Well, we'll make sure we feature it on the site. And it's also, we did that on the show notes, or on the show setup. There's actually the Amazon book links there. So
yep,
for those who
are interested, sure is.
It's out there with a photograph of the book and everything. So it's all pointing to you.
I love Amazon.
That particular book. But what did you learn from that whole experience about writing, Awakening by Departure?
I learned that the loss of a child is probably the most horrendous thing anyone can go through. It's not a natural order at all. You know, your parents are supposed to go before you, and it's very heartbreaking. And I also learned the things that you should say to family members, things that you should completely avoid. One of the biggest things is the majority of people that lose the child, don't be afraid to mention the child's name to the family. They don't want you to forget. That's the majority. Now, some would rather not hear the name. That's a very small portion of people. But when my cousin Becky died, I was just horrified to even mention her name around my aunt. And that is the worst thing you can do. They want you to remember.
Yeah, the American way of death is pretty odd, I think. We try too hard, I think, to shield everybody from it. And in some cultures, I think it's different. They really see it differently than we do, but we're so you know, just funny about it, and especially with a child, you know, dying, and, you know, it just saying the name gives meaning. That seems to be the way for me, you know, that it would be. So that's really what you learned, that there is a meaning, and you're just really pushing hard to remember their life.
Right.
Yeah, I had a couple of friends that, in fact, a childhood friend of mine that I've known since I was born, he was married to a gal, and they had a child, and she died when she was 6 months old, and it literally tore them apart, and it was a very sad to watch, but it eventually broke them up.
That I've seen that, yes. I've had some families that are in this book that did break up. I actually had a father. I spoke to the father. I knew him very well, the family, and he couldn't live with it at all because he blamed himself for his son's death, and he actually took his own life, too.
Oh, man.
That was one of the worst ones I had to write right there. But it's something that does cross many parents' minds, not all of them, but they just want to go with their child. They don't want to send their child alone. No matter, and it doesn't even matter how old this child is. It can be a week old. It can be a day old. And it can be, you know, the child can be 30 years old. It just doesn't make a difference how old this child is. And, you know, and some of the mean things that people had said to one woman who had lost her baby, I believe the baby was 3 weeks old, now don't quote me, some of the meanest things that people did not mean to say to hurt this woman, well, at least you didn't, you know, raise it into adulthood, you know, or something.
Oh,
you know,
man.
But, you know, they're trying to make the mother feel better, but they're not saying the right things, you know, and some people were kicking themselves like, why did I say that? You know, they're not realizing it either because they're not sure what to say. You know, a lot of people say the wrong things unintentionally.
Yeah, John Edwards says that. I remember one of his shows, he was saying, just be prepared when you go to a funeral. You're going to hear people just completely put their foot in their mouth. And
sure.
He's trying to tell folks that, you know, we're the grieving, you know, family to expect that and not to hold it against people because they're just searching and they don't have the tools.
That's
they're
right.
Just not equipped for this, and so it's a natural, unfortunately, a very American thing. It's a natural part of how we're trying to come to terms with death when we're so bloody shielded from it, and I think we treat it too much like something that's just to be not thought about. And so much of what we do in metaphysical work and spiritual things that we do and ghost hunting deals with that. So. I don't know. I'm a lot more comfortable now around it because I spend most of my time talking to dead people. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they seem to have a lot to say. You know, that as a matter of fact, in your travels, what was your take on ghosts and things like that from when you did all these particular travels with different cultures and what they thought about spirits and why they stayed earthbound? And, yeah.
Some of the cultures believe that we're allowed to rest on planes, and it's our decision if we want to come back, when we come back. And usually since, you know, human beings, we bore, so we want to come back. We want to do something productive. Some cultures believe that. Other cultures believe we reincarnate right away. I wasn't into the paranormal until 2005, but I did talk to paranormal researchers. And I listened to them, but since I wasn't into the paranormal, I was kind of taking what they were saying a little lightly.
Right.
But I also kept good notes, and I did add what they said and included what they said. So if I had been more into the paranormal, or just into the paranormal period, I probably would have talked to more paranormal people.
And now that you're out there actually in the field researching this book and doing what you're doing, it sounds to me like you're giving it a little more credence, or you're looking at it with a whole new set of, just a whole new way.
Oh, yeah. I have a whole different outlook on that because I think a lot of people don't get into the paranormal because they've never had an experience. And maybe that was me, maybe, because after my husband died, I call him my husband. We were divorced, but I still call him that because neither of us ever remarried, and we were very close. But I was never into that until then, because something had happened to me then. And I think that's it for a lot of people, really.
So it was really your first time to have, when all the dreams and all these other things started happening.
Right.
That's kind of when it started opening up for you.
Right. And now my aunt died in 92, and I was very close to her. And I would have dreams about her, but nothing ever came true out of those.
Huh.
And when I reflected back, after I started getting into the paranormal, I would look back. And, you know, everyone I've heard, I mean, I've heard a lot of people say, I felt something on the back of my leg, or I felt a hand on my shoulder. And, you know, I looked back, and I remember times like that, standing at my kitchen sink thinking something's on my shoulder. And I also have a musical teapot that was hers that my uncle gave me after she died, and I have to wind it ever so often. And there was a few different times that I had been thinking about her, and the teapot would play one or two notes. But this was all before I was into paranormal, and I just looked at it and thought, oh, I probably need to wind that thing. Didn't give it a second thought. And it hasn't happened since either, since I've been into the paranormal. So.
Well, now that you're actually in it, are you having other experiences? I mean, are things happening for you at a faster pace? Or?
Well, we had a... last March, not this 2009, 2008, we had an investigation that I tagged along on at a diner in Arkansas where there was an armed robbery. One of the thieves was killed. There was three of them.
Uh-huh.
And there was two patrons that died. Also, after I left that investigation, I had actually a horrible time because it was almost, and I wrote a blog on this because I thought that something had attached to me, and it didn't dawn on me for 3 or 4 months. It didn't dawn on me after that investigation. Things were just going very wrong in my life, different things. I even had a window shatter in my home. And when I called the police, it had been raining. I called the police. They could find no footprints anywhere around my home. They could find no rocks, no bullets, nothing to explain why this window busted out in my home. And I happened to be on the phone at this time when this window busted out. And I was actually talking to someone about going on a date, and I had, after this happened, you know, that's when it started getting my attention. I thought, was this my husband? Was he jealous maybe? You know?
Yeah.
Did he not want me to go with this particular person maybe, you know, or something? But I mean, things were happening, just different things were happening. I'd hear footsteps, and I've never in my life heard footsteps ever. But when I would be sleeping, I would wake up because I would think someone was in my home because I was hearing footsteps. Maybe I was dreaming. You know, maybe I was, I don't know. But it was after this investigation. Things like that happened. After I had my third cat die, I had three cats die right in a row. One was only 8 years old. She died of diabetes, which is normal for cats, I guess. Another one was 16. He died of a stroke. And then just within a few weeks, my other cat died. She was 11 years old. All three of my cats died within 4 months of each other. All three of them. The third cat died. I got really mad. And I actually yelled at, whatever is doing this to me, just go away. I mean, I was crying, and I was very mad. Haven't had another problem or incident since. This was in November.
Is it possible that your three cats were soulmates?
I don't know, but it's really upsetting when three cats die right in a row like that.
And, oh, I can understand that completely.
And I actually tagged it to that investigation, these things that were happening. I think that someone is attached. Something.
We had two of our cats. One was 25 years old,
Ooh.
And she and her daughter was 17, or actually 16, and they passed within 8 weeks of one another. And so we went from four cats here on our ranch down to two,
oh.
And it just really broke my father up, you know. And he's had the stroke, and it's hard for him to talk, and he's just real close to these animals,
oh.
And so it just really tore him up. But I don't know. It sounds to me just like it was their time more than anything. But you think that it all tied together.
I do.
That something stimulated it, you know.
Right. My cats were very healthy. I mean, the first
oh,
one was
really?
Like eight. Yes, they were very healthy. She was only eight, and all of a sudden she had diabetes just within a day. You know, she got really sick, tired. I took her to the doctor, had diabetes. And so I put her down. She didn't die on her own. I put her down. But she was so sick, and all the injections you have to go through, I couldn't do that. Not the
yeah.
And then my 16-year-old, he had a stroke. I took him to the vet. had a stroke, you know, so I put him down. You know, they didn't die on their own. My third cat was 11. She got very sick one day, took her to the doctor. She had kidney failure, so I put her down. Three cats, you know, and it killed me.
That is unusual.
I mean, 8 years old and 11 years old. I can see maybe the 16-year-old, maybe, but not the other two.
Yeah, that just doesn't make sense.
No.
I mean, were they outdoor cats, potentially?
No, they were indoor cats.
Wow.
So they, yeah, because we get them where they'll drink glycol or different things, and then you know, or get poisoned, and then the next thing you know, you've got a big problem. But
maybe they drink a little antifreeze or something.
Oh, no. They were indoor cats, and they had a fenced-in yard, and they never went out. One of them was too fat to go out, and the other one was half blind, the 16-year-old, and the other one was just a chicken. And they never left the yard.
Hey, we got a caller coming in, so let's go ahead and take the call. This is from the 951 area code, so let's go ahead and take it.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Okay, hello. How are you?
Hi. Good.
Okay, sorry, I'm calling a bit late. I know you guys started about 8:45, but I'm in Southern California. My question is, I have a couple friends that are into paranormal investigations, and they don't want to basically follow the rules, that sort of thing, with getting in touch with how things work. And I'm wondering, is it dangerous for them to be getting involved in that sort of thing?
Could you elaborate on what following the rules? I mean, you know, go a little further with it?
Well, I mean, being like psychologically strong, that sort of thing. My friend Daniel, his wife, we went to a mausoleum this last week to take pictures. And when we left, she was saying she had this really weird feeling. And I noticed she was acting, you know, a bit different. And I asked her, you know, hey, you know, what's wrong? And she couldn't really explain it. So I was wondering if maybe they needed to maybe be a bit stronger with, I don't know what you would call it, I guess, like psychologically before you go to a paranormal investigation.
Well, I would definitely say an opening and a closing prayer.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
And the cleansing, and if she's going through that right now, there are various meditations and ceremonies, whatever you know works for you best. But ways to invite more good into your life, through prayer or whatever you deem necessary to invite that into your life and to really pay attention to that. And not only that, if she feels like something's attached with her and all that, she's got plenty of resources out there that are available to help. I mean, were you guys, how long were you out there at this mausoleum?
Oh, God, we were there about an hour, and she was fine for about a good 40, 45 minutes, and she started acting kind of weird. I thought, okay, this is really peculiar, because I've known them for 22 years. I've never seen something like that. She started acting strange. I said, you know, you guys should really pay attention more to your surrounding, what's going on. And the whole thing was, my friend Daniel, he said that he was afraid that maybe something was trying to follow her. I'm not sure what he meant by that, but it was really weird. I didn't know what to do. I honestly didn't know what to say.
Yeah, anytime you enter a cemetery or any type of an environment where you are going to open yourself up to maybe a different dimension, or you always want to say an opening, you want to say a closing, and as John says, you want to do a cleansing.
Got it.
I'm
worrying about that.
We do one, I do one personally every time I go out, before I enter a cemetery or a home or a business. I will say that I am there to study. I am not there to interfere with their lives. They are not free to come home with me. They are not free to follow me anywhere other than around the building. They are not free to enter my body. And when I leave, I reiterate what I've said, that they need to stay there. I thank them for any photographs they've allowed me to take, any EVPs that I get. But being a sensitive, I can walk up to a property and tell you exactly what's on that property. And there are places that I have personally gone that I will not walk on because there are bad things on that property that if you walk onto it, these things will take you over no matter what you say.
Exactly. That's what I was worried about, because I felt that my friend's wife was kind of taken over, and I saw something really, really, well, to me it was really weird. We went to go eat afterwards. She had the salad and was staring at her salad, and I have never seen this before. I've known them, like I said, for a lot of years, and she sat there and just stared, and she acted really weird. And finally she brought up this, the whole idea that something followed her, and I panicked at that point. I was like, okay, I've been through a lot of paranormal investigations, but I haven't had anybody actually followed home by something.
Did you ask her, or if you could ask her, if she feels cold, like to the bone cold?
Yeah,
it feels like somebody's dumping ice water onto your internal organs is what it feels like.
Okay. Yeah.
She's chilled to the bone, she's chilled to the bone, and it feels like somebody's dumping ice water onto her internal organs, she has picked something up. That's not the only sign, but that's the most obvious sign that I know of, that I've experienced with myself and with other people. That's the most common that I've experienced as far as something coming home with you.
Yeah, and if
that
this is the case...
something I did not expect you to say. She was talking about...
Oh, trust me, I know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes, I had no idea you were going to bring that up, but I'm telling you right now, that's exactly what she said. She was talking about being so cold, and it was warm. It's in Southern California, right? And it was kind of a warm day, and she would kept...
How long ago was this?
This was about 3 days ago.
Can you... well, I would ask you if you can... go on to my blog talk and shoot me a phone number. I'd really like to talk to her.
Yeah,
we need to do that
because we're coming up towards the end of the show. So why don't we go ahead and do that to get you two in communication with one another? Because what I can say so far is it does sound like this needs to be followed up and an experienced group or a person that can come in and help you.
Please let me help you.
Yeah, I would really.
Please let me
that.
Help you.
I'd appreciate that.
www.ghost-rider-investigations. You can leave a phone number. You can contact me on my on the GRI site. You can click on my picture and it'll take you to my blog. And you can leave, if you can just get me a phone number, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, here on our Blog Talk Radio page for this show, you'll see a link for Kat's page there. On I guess it's on what. What's that link to for you?
My MySpace page.
Yeah, go to the MySpace page for that, and you'll be able to get in contact with her.
Send me a message. I really need to speak to this woman.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate it so much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Wow.
Well, that was unexpected. Mm-hmm. And, definitely follow up on that, Kat. We'll want to follow and see what's going on with that. Carla.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming aboard and going through the whole GRI experience.
Well,
and
thank you.
Thank you so much, Carla, really. I mean, you know.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Me. Good night, you
well,
guys.
We'd like to have you aboard again if you're up to it, because you're a great interview. We'd love to have you back.
Oh, Carla!
Stop it.
Oh, Carla!
Well, yes, it was a wonderful experience. Oh, goodness gracious. I did not need any depends for the whole thing.
I wore Yodas.
Yo, 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 da, yo, da,
oh,
yo, da, yo, da.
Well, I'll tell
you
what. I'm going
to... You guys.
Oops. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Okay, see you later.
All right, bye.
Okay, bye. Okay, with that, we're going to close another edition of GRI, Ghost Rider Paranormal
Yo, yo,
Radio.
Yo, 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 da.
Yoda. So I'll tell you what, we'll have a fun one here for the end. It's our custom GRI Cops remix, so let's play that. We'll let it run out through the end of the show, and Miss Kat, it was another good one with you.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm glad I have my voice, you see. I'm feeling a little bit better.
Okay, well, I'll talk with you later, and let's just go ahead and close it.
All right.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Bad boy, what you want? What you saw? 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 What you sa for a Scooby snack?
Bad boys, bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Would you do it for a Scooby snack?
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys, what you gonna do?
Are there any spiritual entities who wish to speak with us here at the bookstore? If so, please go ahead and
Hang the Street Saloon. Hang the Street Saloon.
GRI is filmed on location by the men and women of Ghost Rider Investigations. All cases are suspect until proven genuine through scientific analysis and testing.